Hello, fellow baseball nuts, and a big warm welcome to the Johnny and Josh Show World Series Extra. Well, the COVID update is all good news. MLB allowing almost 11,500 fans to attend the World Series. Socially distancing, of course, in a 49,115 capacity stadium in Texas. And boy, oh boy, have they been in for a treat. And joining me, as always, great pleasure to welcome David Lengel, Josh Chetwynd, and the Rays top-wearing Eric Jansen. What's that all about, big guy?
Well, unfortunately, I did say to a bunch of friends of mine who are Rays supporters that the Dodgers would win this in five games. And now that's impossible. They said that as a forfeit, I've got to wear a Rays top doing the podcast.
Well, you will notice, of course, I'm still wearing my Rays top because I'm in denial. Boys, what an unbelievable World Series so far. The Dodgers came out as though they meant business in game one, 8-3. I feared the worst for the Rays, but all credit to the AL champions. They bounced straight back in game two, winning that one 6-3. Game three, again, the Dodgers looked so dominant as though this was just fate that was fulfilling their destiny with a 6-2 win. And game four, big Dave, it just went backwards and forwards, but the Dodgers were always, it seemed, in control. What a game game four proved to be.
It seemed they were in control, but they were facing baseball's version of cockroaches, as described by Ken Davidoff of the New York Post, the ultimate survivors. Nobody wants them around or likes them or finds them interesting, but they're there at the end. The Dodgers were so relentless in this game. All those two-out hits. You know, we always complain about our own teams not hitting with runners in scoring position and two outs. All these guys do is they should learn to hit with maybe no outs or one out. I mean, all these guys do is come in the clutch and hit with two outs. So the Dodgers would do that after, and the Rays would come back with a home run. They hit six home runs in this game. They are the ultimate fastball hunters. All they do is look for fastballs. If there's a couple of things that stand out in this game, they're as follows. First of all, I've become so numb to taking out starting pitchers early that I almost didn't notice them taking out Urias, which is a questionable decision, but it seems to be the norm in baseball now. But he was pitching well. He gave up a couple of home runs, but so what? Secondly, they bring in Baez, and one of the great things about Baez is that he throws a great changeup, and the Rays have been hitting fastballs out of the yard all series and all playoffs long. He gets up 2-0 on Kiermaier, 0-2 on Kiermaier, and then Will Smith calls for two fastballs, and Kiermaier launches one. That was a bad decision-making from the catcher. I know Josh will have something to say about that. Also, just too much pressure on the bullpen. The Dodgers don't have – if there's a weakness in the Dodgers, they're not overpowering in relief. And finally, Gratterall was mowing down – Rays, and they were scared of this guy. He eats people's faces. And then they bring in Jansen. I don't want to get too critical of Jansen. We'll talk about that later. But these are the things that stood out in my mind in game four.
Can I just say, Dave's referenced the Rays as cockroaches, and yet they are living up to that label because they just don't know when to lie down. And that was totally personified by that last situation in the bottom of the ninth. There's two men on. It's a two-out situation. They're trailing by one. And then what can be described as one of the most extraordinary plays or misplays that I've ever witnessed in World Series history.
No, absolutely. And just to add on to David's point before we get into that final play, that extraordinary play, which is that one aspect of the Rays, and quite frank, the Dodgers too in this series that has been so surprising, has been the long ball, because we were expecting to go into Globe Life Park where home runs do not fly, and yet both these teams have found a way to elevate and hit the ball out of the ballpark. But the game ended on a play very different from that. You have Brett Phillips coming up to the plate. This is a guy who has now etched his name into the book of unlikely heroes for World Series champions. He put his name with Brian Doyle with the Yankees in 1978, Tony Womack with the D-backs, Pat Borders with the Toronto Blue Jays. These guys who you don't expect to, A, be in a position to make or break a team's success in the World Series, and B, actually come through in that situation. But here he is coming up with runners at first and second with two outs. You have the big-time shift on the lefty, Brett Phillips, and Jansen's able to get up with two strikes on Phillips. Now, Jansen normally in this situation throws a really good cutter. That's what he's been known for. He's not Mariano Rivera, but he's a guy who can throw a cutter, and he can throw that pitch and break in onto the hands of the lefties and just absolutely blow them away. Now, Jansen does throw the cutter. He gets in a little bit, but to Phillips' credit, he's able to muscle a broken bat ball in between the shift. I mean, seriously, just cutting the seam into right center. And so now you're going to have one run score, but you still have a very good chance to have a tie game and continue moving on. And as David mentioned, the Dodgers have been relentless. If they are in a tie game, you know, you still give them the benefit of the doubt, even though they're the visitors in this game. But Chris Taylor, he overruns the ball. The ball bobbles around. He throws it home. We still have a chance because Randy Arozarena trips on his way home. But amazingly, Will Smith trying to bring the tag back to get Arozarena because he thinks it's going to be closer. He doesn't realize that Arozarena has tripped, misses the ball. The ball rolls back. Jansen, Kenley Jansen, who should be backing up, isn't back there, and the game's over. It was unbelievable. It's something that you won't see in another 100 World Series.
Can I ask the question, Dave, with regards particularly with Chris Taylor out in center field, if he doesn't bobble the ball, does he make the out and prevent the lead runner from scoring?
Absolutely. I mean, all they had Rosarina by 50 feet and he fell.
Yeah, but that was Rosarina. He wasn't the lead runner.
You're talking about Kiermaier?
Yeah, I'm talking about Kiermaier as the lead runner. Would he have still got home even if he hadn't bobbled the ball?
No, which I then would have scored. Been a time. I think he scores.
He was on second and he had two outs, so he was running on contact.
Yeah. And also, the advantage of the broken bat single is that the ball wasn't hit with velocity in the outfield. So it was sort of a looping hit, giving Kiermaier all the more time. What was interesting was Will Smith on that play. And I can actually really empathize with the situation. When the ball is hit, the ball was hit more center field, but after Taylor sort of bobbles it, the ball sort of goes over towards right field. So as a catcher, you're looking towards right field away from third base. You're completely blind to the runner. In Will Smith's mind, he's thinking Arozarena is going to be much closer. He doesn't know that Arozarena is going to trip. So he can't see. He's thinking, I've got to get the really quick tag. And it's classic that in those situations, you don't secure the ball first. You're really trying to think about catching and making the really quick tag. And it was a perfect example of leaving the ball behind as you come to make the tag. You don't see it at the major league level that often, but boy, you see it college level. You see it kids all the time making those sort of mistakes.
And you
that's a really important point. That's a really important point that Josh is saying. Basically, Josh, you're saying is that he didn't know Rosarena tripped, and that's why he rushed the play.
If that ball's in center field where it's more straight on and you can see with your peripheral vision what's going on, he could have taken more time to secure the ball and make the tag. If it's hit to left, really easy. The fact that the ball was in right field really informed what happened in that play.
JC, I've got to pick up on this because we're going to discuss Kenley Jansen, and I want to reference Kenley Jansen not being in the right position, which is behind the catcher, backing the catcher up. So he's not doing his job. In other sports, particularly football, you've got a call to a mate who doesn't know that somebody's come out, man on. Is Kenley Jansen, if he's in the right position, not in a position, would he not be in a position to tell Will Smith that he's got time, that he's tripped? Would that communication not have made the difference so he didn't rush to make the tag?
It's so bang bang, Goldie. Like, you don't really have time to be able to relay that in real time.
How would you even say it? What do you say? He fell? I mean, what's the code?
Catch the ball. Yeah. I mean, the ball's in the air at that point. You know, it's really just the mental and physical, combination of getting that right. But you do make the point that Kenley Jansen wasn't backing up in the right place. Normally, the pitcher, whenever there's a play at home plate, they swing back around and they're behind the catcher. And I don't know. I mean, I know David and I talked before this, and he felt that perhaps even if Kenley Jansen's in the right place, he can't get the ball back to Smith.
No way.
But I would have liked to have seen the possibility of that happening.
So what about Kenley Jansen's
Smith doesn't have the ball. Smith is looking for the ball. He's not even positioned at the plate anymore. He's all over the place.
But if he turns back and he sees Jansen with the ball, Jansen, I think, maybe gets it back because, I mean, Arozarena barely got to home. It was one of those things where he was crawling at the end. So I actually think there may have been a chance. It certainly would have added what was an incredibly exciting, if not very flawed play. It would have taken it to the next level.
Yeah, I'm loving this, guys. We've talked for 5 minutes about one play in four games. Kenley Jansen, let me ask the question.
Yeah.
Is his future in these high leverage situations, is it now seriously in doubt?
100%. I mean, I think he's definitely done in that role for the rest of these playoffs. The question is whether he can get his velocity back up in the offseason. You know, he was throwing max 92. Here's a guy who normally threw 94. And those 2 miles per hour make a big difference when we're talking about the cutter. When you're talking about that late break that you need, if you have a little bit more velocity, it makes a difference. And it's just not cutting quite as much. I honestly believe that if it was Kenley Jansen from last year, Brett Phillips does not even muscle that ball in for the broken bat hit. He's going to get jammed and it's going to be just a weak ground ball or a little pop-up if it was the Kenley Jansen of old. He's not the pitcher he was previously.
Okay, Dave, Arozarena falls, stumbles. He's not stumbled in any other sense. He's now set a postseason record. I think he's hit 9 home runs in total. Is he the real deal or is he just having the greatest few weeks of his life?
Well, that's something we'll have to discuss in a few seasons. You know, sometimes in baseball, you can get streaky and you can get hot, and baseball is littered with careers that have started that way and then have flamed out. But I have to say one thing about Jansen because we're talking about this. Jansen gets a lot of heat. I like Jansen. I think that they put a lot of work on his shoulders over the past 5 years. You know, remember those playoffs? He was coming in 2 innings, 3 innings. His arm may be shot, but if you want to get on Jansen, I don't think, I mean, in 2017 in game two, he gives up that home run to Bregman. First of all, he knew it was coming. Okay. People talk about that home run. He knew it was coming, right? What was that in Houston? Where was that when he hit that home run? I think if it wasn't
because
Houston, he knew it was
because they were stealing the signs. Yeah. Okay.
So that's number one. And I'll have egg on my face if that game was in LA, but never mind. So number two is Jansen had gotten his form back and been pitching pretty well. He gave up a broken bat, a hit to Kiermaier. He got the second out. He gives up a little nothing in betweener that beats the shift. The guy is out by 50 feet if they catch the ball. And let me tell you something. After this, I turned on Dodgers Sports Talk because I'm a masochist after my father called me after midnight in like horrified, like death rattle. Because he's a Dodgers fan, as people who know me know, he's a Brooklyn Dodgers fan. He's watching this tape. He's freaked out. I'm turning on LA Sports Radio. They are pissed about Will Smith being in the game because Austin Barnes, according to them, is a better catcher. He calls a better game. He wouldn't have called for those fastballs against Kiermaier back in the fifth inning when Baez was throwing changeups there, you know, making pitches. And they think that Barnes is going to make that play at the plate. So, you know, Jansen got 2 outs. Let up a couple of flukish hits, and the guy would have been out by 50 feet if they could catch the ball. Done.
May I just add, by the way, that there was a hereditary problem with the last name Jansen, whether it was one S or two, that you do, you are prone to mistakes and accidents. So, but also, can I just add that Brett Phillips probably will never have to pay for another meal or another drink for quite a while in the Tampa Bay area, let alone get a speeding ticket. There you go.
Yeah, he's going to get all those daiquiris and margaritas down in Tampa Bay.
Scooping coffees.
Dave, I'm not disagreeing that he's still a useful pitcher. I'm just saying he's not the pitcher he was a year ago, 2 years ago. He had the heart problem.
That's
he
fair.
Has issues. He's not the pitcher he is. And
Gratterall
is a yeah, he's a better pitcher. I mean, he's a guy who could throw 100. Okay. He's a guy who I think is a little stronger at this point. And yes, I agree. Neither of those hits were hard hit balls, but I'm saying that if he was the pitcher last year, they wouldn't have even been hits. So, you know, there is a spectrum of performance, and he's just not at the highest end that he previously was.
Guys, I've got to move you forward. We've got to look ahead, and I want to focus on Game 5. We've got Clayton Kershaw on the mound for the Dodgers, who seems to have put his postseason woes of the past behind him. This season so far, I think he's had a 2.88 ERA over 4 starts, but we know that is not in keeping with what's gone before in what's been a stellar career. I was looking at these stats, JC. In the regular season, he's 175 wins to a 76 losses, 2.43 ERA in his career. And yet his postseason career, he's 12-12 with a 4.22 ERA, almost double. Are you concerned about Kershaw in Game 5?
I'm less concerned about Kershaw. First off, I wouldn't call it a myth, but I feel like it's overblown, his postseason woes. I think he's had a couple of bad outings, but if you look at it game to game, he's actually been really successful on a number of occasions, and I think that he's a great pitcher in this situation. The bigger question is that he's not going to go deep into the game. He's not a pitcher at this point in his career who's going to give you 7-8 innings. So the real big question is how do you plan the bullpen at the back, even if he throws well? You're going to need to be really prepared. Dave Roberts needs a really good game plan because this has been part of the problem. As Dave pointed out, when you're looking at the two bullpens, the Rays have some more depth there, and the Dodgers are, if they don't boat race it and get a big lead, they're going to have to really work their way through probably, if not the sixth, certainly the seventh, eighth, and ninth.
Dave, there are stats.
Game six is going to be a lot of bullpens for the Dodgers because they're going to have Bueller
go Gonsolin or May.
And so
yeah,
it's like a bullpen game for them. Game
you
six.
Play
so
Kurt, they, are, you, are they saving Kershaw for seven? Then you got to ask yourself that.
No, because you got Walker Bueller. You got Walker Bueller for seven. He's the one pitcher who you can rely on to give you likely deep into the game, although he didn't necessarily throw deep in his last start, although he was absolutely magnificent. I think that the issue with game six is big. This is almost in a way a must win for the Dodgers because the Rays are better lined up moving forward because you've got Glasnow, you've got Morton, you've got Blake Snell, you've got your three big pitchers. So you're coming with three sort of very established starters. You need to have Kershaw at the best of his ability for the Dodgers to win this all.
Dave, Josh is defending Kershaw's postseason record, and yet since the advent of the wild card in 95, he has the fifth worst postseason ERA among pitchers with at least 70 innings. And we also know, if you look at the stats, that his problems seem to happen when he's pitching for the second time in a series, which is what he will be doing tonight in Game 5.
Yeah, I mean, look, when you talk about playoff performance, I can go up and down and talk to you about Hall of Fame players that didn't necessarily do well in the playoffs. I mean, A-Rod didn't do a thing until 09. And when he turned it around, Bonds didn't do a thing until 02. I mean, he was hitting
Schmidt,
in the ones.
Mike Schmidt, people forget Mike Schmidt, 1980 World Series, 1-18. So you're right.
But Gouley,
this happens.
I wanted to make one point here, which is that this is the first time Kershaw's played in a postseason after a regular season that was only 60 games. So he didn't have to pitch, you know, 30 starts in a regular season and then be fatigued by the time he got to the World Series. And I think that is a bit of a distinction here, certainly, and even if your point is correct.
Gouldy, I tell you right now, I don't want to see Roberts, if the Dodgers hit tonight, I don't want to see Roberts with the quick hook. They need innings from him because they got a bullpen game in game six. If they're up 5-0, 6-0, he's got to go six at least.
Well,
you don't need to save Kershaw because this is going to be it. This is his last start of the season. So if he can give you seven and not be in the bullpen in game seven, big deal. You know, that's going to be a difference maker.
Guys, his pitch count in the postseason so far, 93, 87, 87, and 78. That's been Kershaw's pitch count. What about Glasnow? We've got to focus on him as well. He's on the mound tonight for the Rays. Game one, not up to his usual standard. 4.1 innings pitch, giving up 6 earned runs. He walked 6 guys. There was his problems. His control seemed to be all over the shop.
Oh, I mean, it takes two to get a walk, Gouldy. And I think that is as much
defense.
Okay, no, so you're saying that's more down to the Dodgers hitters being patient rather than
him? I think it's
a
combination, yeah, because Glasnow needs people to swing outside of the zone. Dodgers hitters are amongst the best in terms of having zone discipline.
Is that an issue, guys? I was looking from the game one to game four, the walks comparison. The Dodgers have had 9 walks. Tampa Bay have given up 18, twice as many. And that's purely, presumably, that just proves your point that the Dodgers basically are the best in the business when it comes to being patient at the plate.
Yeah, I mean, what we've seen in baseball a lot is in recent years, you guys got these guys throwing 100 miles an hour with an 82 mile an hour curveball, you know, these huge speed differentials that hitters are guessing and that they're expanding the strike zone. And the Dodgers are an anomaly in that they're able to own the strike zone. Max Muncy, you know, you look at his batting average and you think, oh, this guy's terrible, but the guy has amazing control in terms of not swinging at balls outside of the strike zone. It is what has made the Dodgers in this lineup unique and special, and why the Dodgers have worked so good this year.
Can I ask you a question, Josh? Do you think the Dodgers bullpen has to change their approach a little bit, because I'm sick of watching these guys just hit fastballs out of the park. I mean, when is somebody going to make a pitch and throw some junk to these guys? Because it's just over and over and over the same thing. When are they going to, you know, here it is, hit it. You can't challenge people every single night.
Yeah, I mean, there's a very simple concept when you're calling a game, which is if they're going to beat you, let them beat you on your best pitch, right? And not that's working. Exactly, but that's what you're talking about. When you're talking about Baez, he throws the great changeup, and then you're throwing the fastball. So, you know, I'm not one to judge. I mean, obviously, they have huge books on all these players, and there is certainly a game plan. And, I agree that Austin Barnes is probably the better defensive catcher, but Will Smith is a major league catcher. He knows what he's doing. So, you know, it's hard for me to get in his head and start criticizing without understanding the rationale for the choices he made in the moment. But
he's a little young, though. He's very raw. You know,
sure. Sure. But, I know as a catcher, before games, when we were having big games, you have the book on every single player. You have a list on your arm, usually, or in your back pocket, where you know what tendencies are. You know what hot zones are. So you're making a lot of choices based on that. And again, I don't know what the choices were in those pitches, but I do agree with you that if you're getting beat on your second best pitch, you're not doing the right things as a catcher and as a pitcher.
To back your point up, Dave, about playing small ball, very interesting that the Dodgers have stolen bases in game one. They stole three. They stole two in game three. They didn't steal in either of the other games. Guess which games they won? Game one and game three. Is that a coincidence? I don't know. I'm with you. I think they're focusing too much on everybody seems to be focusing too much on hitting home runs. Let's see some small ball.
Play was amazing.
Dave, you were tweeting on our WhatsApp page. You were going crazy because there'd been one bunt.
There've only been like three bunts in the postseason, sacrifice hits in the postseason. I mean, the game has changed dramatically. And I know we'll talk about this in our wrap-up show because it's reflective of so much, but it's crazy.
Well, guys, just very quickly then, look ahead beyond game five and tell me your thoughts about we're obviously going to get at least a game six. I mean, I just can't see this going anywhere other than game seven. I think this is just, it's written in the stars.
Well, here we go. That's the thing. You know how much I love my quirky facts, and these past few games it's like a tsunami of quirky facts. For example, like we were talking about Rosarena, who is currently tied with Pablo Sandoval for most hits in the postseason with 26. There's two games left in the series. You know he's going to break it. He's not going to go.
It's the longest postseason of all time. That's why those cumulative stats this year are not as exciting.
Someone's got to do it.
Very true. Very true. But Sandoval did it in 17 games, and Rosarena did in 18. You can take that away from him? No. Come on. It's pretty impressive what Randy has been doing. Other quirky facts that there's just too many to count. Never has in the history of the World Series a team hit four consecutive innings hit a home run. So it's the Tampa Bay Rays hit a home run in four consecutive innings. Never been done before in the history of the World Series.
Throw them another fastball.
There you go. And also one more quirky stat, the LA Dodgers now have the record 7 straight postseason games with multi-home runs. So there you go. That's just maybe will be extended tonight in game five.
Well, guys, we now need a World Series trivia question from you, Eric.
I will thank Ian Blees, by the way, for giving me a quirky fact this week. Did you know that the person who's got the current record for most home runs hit inside Globe Life Field is not a Texas Ranger? It's Corey Seager. Let's face it, you think about it, the Rangers have only played 30 home games in that stadium. You know, it's been their inaugural year. So Corey Seager is still.
That's a real slight on Joey Gallo.
But my question to you today is, since Globe Life Field is right next to the old Globe Life Park, which is across the street from where the Rangers used to play, who currently holds the record? Well, now has the all-time record for most home runs hit inside the old Arlington ballpark. Is it A, Josh Hamilton? Is it B, Adrian Beltre? Is it C, Rafael Palmeiro, and because we've seen four games so far, I'll give you a D.
Ichiro.
Is it D? Pudge Rodriguez. Nadia
Melina.
Rob Manfred.
Ivan Rossi Rodriguez. Baker. So there you go. So basically, is it Josh Hamilton? Is it Adrian
Beltre? No, Prince Fielder?
Okay. So, listen, four. There's four. Okay, I'm only Prince giving you Fielder? Four. Hamilton, Beltre, Palmeiro, or Pudge. Those are your four options. We'll do it in a few more minutes. I'll give you the answer. First of all, as well, this is the anniversary of, believe it or not, I'm not an Elton John fan in any way, shape, or form. I know people chastise me for that, but 45 years ago today, Elton John held that concert at Dodger Stadium. 110,000 people went to see him. That's when he was wearing a sequin LA Dodgers cap and uniform on stage. A friend of mine who's from LA said that one concert transferred her to become a baseball fan. She was not a baseball fan at all until she saw Elton John at Dodger Stadium. Bizarre. There you go, mixing music.
Eric, you don't like Elton John? Don't go breaking my heart.
Oh God.
Oh.
Is it amazing?
I heard he's getting a Barbie doll. Isn't he getting a Barbie doll?
What?
An Elton John Barbie doll?
Yeah, he's getting Elton John is getting a Barbie doll, and I think he's going to be wearing that uniform.
Hang on. It won't be a Barbie doll. It'll be a Barbie Ken.
Whatever.
It'll be a Barbie Elton.
Gouldy knows his Barbies from his Kens.
Well, here's the thing. Because that year, 1975, the LA Dodgers finished second place behind the Big Red Machine, the Cincinnati Reds. Dodger Stadium was available the whole month of October. And that's why Elton John did his concert in that stadium in 1975, which apparently was a tipping point of his career. Billie Jean King was a backup singer as well in that. But there you go. That's my silly, irrelevant, quirky fact mixing pop culture and baseball.
And can I offer some input on the back of that? Isn't it amazing that Elton John could wear a Dodgers uniform and many women are now baseball fans on the back of it? You're constantly in baseball gear and not one woman has ever written in to say, I'm now a baseball fan because of Eric, because of what Eric wears. You haven't got that impact, buddy.
Don't go breaking my heart. Let me use that one then.
Okay.
Okay, mailbag.
By the way, it is a Barbie.
Okay, the postman always rings twice.
Okay.
Go ahead, Johnny, quickly.
Guys, this is just World Series Extra, so obviously it's not going to be the length of the normal podcast. We're only doing a couple of questions, but we've had loads, so I'm grateful to everybody. First one I'm going to mention is Paul W. Mitchell, the legendary Scottish BBC football commentator. We all know Paul is a big Rays fan, and he's been having an online spat with none other than Davey Lengel. What's wrong with the Rays uniform, Paul asks? Why don't small market teams with lesser-known players, to those who don't watch them, that is, get the credit they deserve? You're dissing their uniform, you're dissing their stadium, and yet they deserve the love, and Paul is taking you on, Big Dave.
Shame on you, David Lengel. Shame on you.
Hang on a second. First of all, let's talk about the stadium. I think there's been way worse domes in baseball history than that place. I was in that place.
That's a
compliment? It was built for baseball.
There's way worse?
Oh, yeah.
Domes should all be binned. I'm not going to.
No, I understand that. But it was actually built for baseball. Like no other dome. They were all multi-purpose. So the sight lines are really good. It's not a bad place to watch a ball game. The uniforms are terrible. He's a great commentator. He likes his curling. He likes his football. He doesn't have a great design sense.
Balls.
Come on. You don't like powder blue? We talked about unis in the season. You got to go powder blue. That's like 70s Redux.
They have that alternate uniform that they don't wear. That is fun. That I like. Yeah.
That's old school.
They should wear that tonight.
One more.
Okay. Anthony J, judging by the drop-off in starter innings these days, as in game two, no starter at all being used for the Dodgers, he asks, will this trend continue? Will we be seeing more 1-2-3 inning guys from now on? Thank you for your kind words, Anthony.
I say yes. I mean, this is, I think, going to be one of the greatest impacts of this Rays team. I think you're going to keep on having openers, which we've now seen are sort of de rigueur for baseball when you're in the situation you have the bullpen days. But what has been so interesting about the Rays has been Nick Anderson using him in the third inning, the fourth, the fifth, the sixth, the seventh, Castillo. All of a sudden, there's a new approach to bullpens. You don't have the formulae closer anymore. That pitcher is now a fixer. Comes in, high leverage situations, and throws them. And teams have been moving in that direction, but this postseason has really shown that that can be a very valuable approach.
I have got to get one more in. I'm so sorry, Eric, because okay, Will Thomas has tweeted in this question about 9 times. I keep ignoring it. And he said to me, literally, Gouldy, I'll keep asking until you guys answer. So, Will, I apologize for the delay in getting this out. He wants to know how much would have having baseball as part of London 2012 have increased the popularity of the game over here in terms of fan base and infrastructure? And obviously, with the cancellation of the London series, you guys already mentioned your concerns that it will never happen again. You put the two together, what difference would it have made for the future of British baseball and spreading the word? Your thoughts, JC?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it would have helped. I think more than anything would have been the infrastructure piece. You would have had to have built a stadium. The hope is that it would have stayed, but we've seen in other locations like Athens where that stadium and the practice stadium stayed for only a certain amount of time and went away. I think the infrastructure would have been the biggest piece. I think that one-off events are great as sort of a booster, but you need to have something sustained. And so as valuable as both of those would have been, bringing back, like us, terrestrial television baseball, things like that.
Hey, that's a great idea.
I'm brilliant. I know how to fix things. But I do think it's the hard graft. It's the long-term, year-in, year-out presence of baseball that's going to do more than any singular event, as much as those would have been valuable.
Okay, Enrique, time for the trivia answer. You offered us 4 options. I know
okay,
which one.
Okay, so yeah, which player has hit the most home runs in the former Globe Life Park, not Globe Life Field as
yeah, it's I misstated called. That, by the way. This was Field. I think I called it Park at the start, so apologies.
It's very complicated. Yes, I have a hard time with it.
Basically, Parks it was called, fields. It used to be called a ballpark at Rangers ballpark at Arlington. Then it was called America Quest. Then it was just called the ballpark at Arlington. And then it was called Globe Life Park. And now they moved across the street to Globe Life Field. But who has hit the most home runs in the former Globe Life Park? Is it A, Josh Hamilton, B, Adrian Beltre, C, Rafael Palmeiro, or D, Pudge Rodriguez? Josh Chewin, I'll let you go first.
I am going to go with Rafael Palmeiro. Whether he was juiced or not, he hit a lot of bombs there.
He did play a lot of years in Baltimore. I don't know. Okay. Thing, Johnny Gould?
I was going to go with Rafael Palmeiro, but I don't think I can now that JC has. So I'm going to go with the old-timer. I know he didn't play there for his whole career. I'm going with Beltre, but he was one hell of a home run hitter.
I want to go with Prince Fielder, but I'm not allowed.
Well, you just want to be wrong, Dave. I don't like for a wrong answer.
Well, I don't like the wrong answer.
If you don't want to pick one that's in the top
Michael
four.
Young.
You got to work on your choices.
Blaylock!
Give me Pudge.
Pudge Rodriguez. Okay, so basically the answer is, well, Josh Hamilton only hit 99. Of course, he played in Tampa Bay, and he played in the Angels. Adrian Beltre hit 120.
Go on, Adrian.
Pudge Rodriguez, 109.
Yes!
Rafael Palmeiro, 130.
No!
Yeah. Now one final thing. Now, since they moved across the street, to the reason why is 407 is center field straightaway, the deepest part of the ballpark, pretty much. Why 407 when the former one's 400? Because they picked 407 because number 7 for Pudge Rodriguez. On the left, they picked 329 for Beltre's number. And on the right, they picked 326 for Johnny Oates' number. Oh, and that's why they aren't. Now, nice. those Mookie Betts home runs and those that were taken away by Mookie Betts, I should say, would never have happened in the old ballpark at 400. So because of Pudge Rodriguez had ever extra 7 feet to honor Pudge Rodriguez, that's why there's, you know, the a few home runs didn't go over. And there's your trivia question of the week. Johnny, let's wrap her up.
Okay, guys. Well, thank you so much, as always. Now, for all our listeners out there, do check in the social handles, particularly on Facebook, because for our wrap-up show next week, we're going to be doing an awards poll. We've obviously got all the announcements coming out, MVPs and Gold Glove winners, et cetera, et cetera. So we're going to ask you to get involved. So do check us out on Facebook. And that's the Johnny and Josh Show, obviously. And if you want to get in touch, there's Twitter, there's Instagram, at Johnny and Josh, usual social handles. But do get involved in the polls, guys, as well as obviously the questions. We've just recorded the fantasy baseball wrap-up, the Fantasy Extra. And I want to say a personal thanks to James Holden for giving up his time literally every week of the season. season and providing some unbelievable tips as well, which helped me towards a title treble. Not many people achieve that. I'll leave it there. But that is it from us. I'm going to leave you with this stat, guys. We have a tied series, two apiece, and yet Tampa Bay have given up double the walks to LA, and LA have had 75 total bases to just 59 from Tampa Bay. Those stats suggest that this is for the Dodgers to win, and yet it's all tied 2-2. You said it, Big Dave. They are the cockroaches of baseball. This one's going all the way. We hope you're enjoying it, and we look forward to having your company next weekend on the Johnny and Josh Show. From us all, bye-bye.